I'm Ken. This is Arbitrarily Deterministic on KeithEffem.com. Show where I talk to artists, people that I admire. Those are not mutually exclusive, by the way. I admire artists as well. But mostly I talk to artists, digital artists, people who do things that can be released on the internet for sale. Most of the time, those people are releasing these things that they're making on the internet as NFTs. Those things are financialized products by nature. If we talk about the market, you should take our advice because we're really fucking smart and everything we say is really fucking intelligent and you're going to make a ton of fucking jack off of it. That's how it's going to play out. We're really rich. I don't know if you know this, but we stand around. Actually, me and my friends, whenever it gets cold here in Berlin, we just burn piles of money because that's what we have as like kindling. So that's what we do to stay warm here in Berlin because we're mad rich. So you should take anything that we say, specifically today. Everything we talk about is going to be financial advice, 100%. So today I have someone I was really fortunate to have run into when I was in Miami for Untitled, for Art Basel. On the last day that I was there, I just went to get some coffee after I had woken up, and I ran into a group of people that were sitting at the table next to me, and they were talking about a mutual friend. And a gallery from a mutual friend, and I kind of leaned over and I was like, are you guys talking about Super Chief? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, is Ed still here? And my guest, Empress Trash, she said, I don't know, but the other person that she was with, Rob Ness, he said, why? Which fucking cracked me up, but I did laugh about it. I just kind of like sat there for a second while I short circuited in my head and was like, that's a pretty good response that this guy just gave. And she was just like, I don't know. Anyway, so hi, Empress Trash, how are you?
Good. I'm great. And this is not financial advice. In Mexico City, we don't have piles of money to burn.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You know what? Just give me your address. So I'll ship a box.
Also don't get as cold.
Yeah. So. You don't need it for kindling. Totally. Hey, so why do I have you on the show today?
I'm assuming because I'm the Empress.
Bam! That's the answer I was looking for. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So
I mean, do you want me to introduce myself?
I do. Tell us a little bit about you, because I honestly know so little about who you are and what you're up to that this is very exciting. I've seen your art and I own some of your art. I've bought some of your NFTs.
Thank you.
So, but I want to know more about you. Let's go.
Well, I am a lifelong artist. Mm-hmm. I grew up in crap. I left home at 13. Mm-hmm. I spent my 20s being messy. I went to college at the University of Iowa in my late 20s and got my BFA in painting, drawing, and animation. Mm. And shortly after I graduated, I moved to California. And there I did a bunch of art stuff. Mm-hmm. I was in an art collective with the Firehouse Art Collective with Tom Franco. I worked on like a bunch of different things. Like I worked on Ai Weiwei's show on Alcatraz as just like an intern thing. I was in and out of like both the high end and the underground world, art world in that area. And then eventually like I worked up to where I was running underground shows and like having like art shows and stuff, and all like I was making most of my money off of that, and then COVID happened, which is a common story for a lot of people, a lot of artists in crypto.
Yeah,
it's a common story. And I am lucky enough that I have my BFA, that I got a degree, and I was able to find a job. Mm-hmm. Appraising art, but it was just an overglorified warehouse job. Uh-huh. And then at that place, I found out. One of my coworkers was like, I can tell you're miserable. You hate this job. And I'm like, yes, I do. And she's like, have you ever heard of crypto? And I'm like, well, I've heard of crypto. She's like, have you heard of NFTs? And I'm like, no. And then that opened up a whole thing. I went home that weekend. I researched it. I'm like, oh, I'm on it.
Yeah.
And The rest is history. I've been
like, were you always Empress Trash? I mean, was that like just straight up, like, that, as soon as you got into it, just bam, that's my crypto art name?
As crypto artists, that developed from college during my time in Oakland. That was a long development. It was like, it would flip between like Empress Trash and Trash Empress, depending. And it was just kind of like my art name.
Why?
That I, the first iteration of it was actually, I had to do a self portrait in a painting class, and I actually painted myself as like an royal figure with like a cardboard crown and paper towel tube as a scepter and like a towel for a cape, and it was very like mocking portraiture in general because I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to paint myself. That was the last thing I wanted to paint. And I was like, well, how can I do this in a way that I can get my anger out about painting this? And so that was the first time she came out, I would say, in a tangible way. And like where I was like, you know, this could be like a thing. And like I started thinking about it. Previous to that, like the Empress part always was kind of there. I just never like exerted it as my art identity because there's this great thing that some people know about called Discordianism.
What is that?
Discordianism, it's like a religion, but it's all about chaos.
Okay.
And in it, they're like, you can be your own pope. Like, everyone's a pope. No, there's not like a central whatever.
Not it's like one pope. It's like everybody's a pope.
Everybody's pope. And it's like this tongue-in-cheek like commentary that is kind of become the pseudo-religion. That started in like the 60s. And when I was reading, like they have a book, it's called The Principia Discordia. It's like all, it's like pretty much like the basis of all this like nonsense. I was reading it. I'm like, well, what if I don't want to be a pope? What if I want to be an empress? That was the first time I like ever thought of it. And that was like in my mid 20s. And then that always like, kind of stuck with me. And so that's where that came from. And also my time, so it crystallized. It's a very complex journey becoming an empress.
Yeah, I believe that. I've never tried it, but there's a reason why, I think.
In my time in San Francisco, I learned about Emperor Norton, who also happened to be mentioned in this book, The Principia Discordia. And then I never like researched Emperor Norton, but then when I was in San Francisco, I learned about him more because he's a local figure there. And he's pretty much this crazy guy who lost everything in some bad trading of grain.
In the great grain trades.
Like this is like pre San Francisco burning down. This is like olden days. At some point he just declared himself the Emperor of the United States.
And smart, that's what you do when
protector of Mexico. And he started making decrees and people were like, oh, this guy, he's just a kook. But he actually started printing.
Just shit. Oh my god, these people back in those days.
Started printing his own money.
Oh yeah, of course he did.
And people accepted it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's great. Well, back then they actually had like money, like in those in those weird ways, like these regional monies. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. And so he became through his lifetime being just a nutter and amazing and everything I aspire to be, to be honest. Like, in his time there, he became so regionally famous. By the time he died, like tens of thousands of people showed up to his funeral.
Oh, wow.
Died. Wow. Because they were like, he's emperor.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah, that's what happens.
But the local, so just to finish that story, the local rumor on him, which you, I don't find written online as much, but is more of like a word of mouth tale in the Bay Area, is actually when the great San Francisco earthquake happened, all the insurance companies wouldn't like cover the damage. And a lot of the rumors are is he's actually the one who had the idea to burn all the buildings down, and he's the one who did it, which is why all the local businesses treated him as they did. That's like the urban legend.
That's the legend, yeah.
Of it.
Yeah.
Of essentially he committed massive tax fraud to save the
The only way to do this is to do come on, we're just going this way. Bonk.
Yeah.
Burn
and that's why
down.
They everyone took his money. That's why like he just got every like he got treated like an emperor because he saved the city. But that there's no like
It's just urban legend. It's just lore.
Urban legend. Yeah, it's part of the mythos of being Emperor Norton. But
so are you going to burn down Mexico City to save it to save it from itself? This is what you're getting at here.
No. Not at all.
Though it would be a fantastic story. So Empress Trash just decided to burn down Mexico City. No. It had become such a den of sin. Yeah.
No, I love the sin. I love the sin. I'm not here to smite.
Why'd you choose Mexico City, by the way?
Chaos. I just followed chaos.
Okay.
And so about a year after I started doing crypto and I went full time as an artist in this space, Oakland was just getting crazy for me. I had a lot of personal things going on. I don't really want to get into that. I mean, people know, but
yeah,
it's not like there's secrets, but it's just, that's the past. And I decided to be nomadic and I just started traveling like the Southwest, the United States, because I never really got to see it before in my life.
Yeah.
And so I went to Arizona for like a while, New Mexico, Texas. And then I had to go back to LA for a show. My art was going to be up. And when I was in LA, I originally was planning on like moving to Miami, but I'm like, I'm already back in California again. Like, what am I doing? Like, I was halfway there and then I came back. And so I actually put a Twitter poll out of like, where should I go next? North, south, east. And everyone voted Tijuana, like massively.
Tijuana. Everyone's like,
go to Tijuana. And I'm like, fine, I've never been to Tijuana. And so I went to Tijuana and it was like the biggest culture shock that I've experienced because you drive from San Diego suburbs to across the border and you're in downtown Tijuana. And it's like, what just happened? And I don't speak Spanish.
Really? Still you don't speak Spanish? You live in Mexico City?
Very little.
Wow.
At that time I had zero.
Yeah.
Like absolute zero.
Yeah.
Now I can go to stores and stuff now. I'm doing better about it. Yeah. I've been mostly isolated while I'm in Mexico. So there's that. So I was in Tijuana and then I was like just hanging out on the beach. Like I got a beach condo there. It's super cheap and I was like, okay, I was just going to stay there like a month or two and just get my head together. Cause I was like, so for context to that, it was like, I just had my art in South by Southwest. I just had my art internationally exhibited for the first time. Rob Ness put my art in who, you know, you met me with in Miami.
Why?
Who, what?
Why?
Why? That's
why?
put my art in a trash art show in Paris. So I just had my first international official exhibit.
Yeah.
And my art was also featured in TED Talks, like conference in Vancouver.
Cool.
Like in their like chill out area, they had like a bunch of art up and my art was exhibited in there.
That's wonderful.
While Al Gore was talking, which is like the weirdest thing. And so I was having having all these existential crises because I'm like, I'm making it, I'm doing the things that I always, you know, wish for. It's like my art is selling, like I'm getting all this like recognition, like my art is being displayed places. And I was just like hanging out in Tijuana, like trying to like understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. Like, essentially, like, I was just hanging out, me and my dog, and like having like going to the roof of my condo and just staring at the ocean, like, what is life?
Were you writing little things on paper and sitting it out into the wind?
But like, definitely writing little notes, like trying to, anyway.
Yeah, sure, trying to figure it all out. I get
trying to, like, I mean, my life completely changed. It went from relative, like, I mean, regionally, some people knew me in Oakland, but relative obscurity to all of a sudden, like, I'm at, like, my art is everywhere.
Yeah.
And while I was there, Roe v. Wade got overturned in the United States.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was sitting there and I was like, why do I need to go back to the United States? Because I was planning on going back from there. I wasn't going to go into Mexico further. And I was like sitting there and I looked down and like I had a pile of pesos because, you know, I'm rich. I have all that money to burn.
Yeah, sure. Pesos. You got 100 pesos? You're doing good.
Anyway, I had a pile of pesos and I was looking at it and Frida Kahlo's on some of the money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Right. Yeah. That's really,
right.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And so I started thinking about, you know, I'm always thinking about that stuff in the crypto art space, like the implications of the visuals on our money and like how, and all of that. And I started thinking about, well, my country, like, it's all white male slave owners.
Yep.
And like, they won't even put Harriet Tubman on money, even though like people tried.
Yeah.
And here it's like beautiful, colorful money of like these religious figures and artists and like Frida Kahlo and butterflies and salamanders. And I'm just like, I think I just need, like, I saw Frida and I'm like, maybe I'd have a better time here in Mexico.
Yeah.
As a woman artist, just aspiring to be like, you know, at a Frida level. I mean, all of us artists are aspiring to like something.
To be able to do something. And,
yeah. And so I started at that point, I'm like, F it. And I'm staying in Mexico. And I just started driving down the Baja Peninsula. I spent like the rest of the year doing that. And then I was in like a small fishing village for a while. Like, I was pretty isolated. Mm-hmm. I was just like in the desert or on the beach, just like still having my existentialness. Mm-hmm. And in November 2022, I got invited to the non-NFT summit here in Mexico City to speak about being an artist, and by like Neurocolor, Mohara, all these great Mexico City artists were like organizing the event. And I didn't really know them, but Stella Bell loves me and is one of the OG crypto artists. And she recommended me to be a speaker at the non-NFT summit because I'm be very anti-establishment about stuff. And I ended up coming to Mexico City for that. And that is when I was like, I need to move to Mexico City. Like, holy crap. Like, I landed here and it was just one of those instant, like, I felt like I needed to be here. And so I went back to Baja and I, within a month or two, it took 2 months because because non-NFT, then it was Miami 2022. And after that I got back and then I sold my car because I didn't want to drive it here. And I just sold it to a friend of a friend in Mexico. My stuff and my dog and I flew us here. Like, I figured out how to fly a Rottweiler and
you did it. You nailed it.
I did it.
Is there a big like crypto art scene in Mexico City? Is that like do you guys do like meetups and have parties and or are there constant things going on?
There are things going on. And when I first came here, I tried to go to as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like reverting to like my introvert.
I'm
just like working on art all the time, but
that's what happens.
We all are kind of like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
sure.
It's we message each other.
Sure.
We're like, how's it going? what I think, like, Zona Mako is like the big art festival fair here. It's like Art Basel, but Mexico City style. And that's coming up in February. So I'm pretty, like, I'll see everyone then. Plus, like, Ed from Super Chief's coming in, and, you know, a bunch of dope people are coming in. So I'm not, I mean, but yeah, there is, like, so, like, Bright Moments has a weekly meetup. There's a Bitcoin bar here. Actually, like, it's literally called the Bitcoin bar, like the Bitcoin embassy bar. Like, some, there's the Pepe House, which is run by Gus Grosaka. Maybe saying his last name wrong, but it's essentially his house, and then he has parties there sometimes. They have like a film night. And then there's just get togethers, like, oh, you know, like, it's this, like, my birthday was a get together.
Cool.
Neurocolor and Ann Ahoy, like, they had like a big housewarming slash baby shower because Ann's going to be having a baby soon. So, like, it's like, congrats. It's kind of just normal family stuff like that. It's less.
That's great.
Like, oh, conferencey, like.
Yeah. I mean, that's a different vibe, though, in general, right? Yeah. I mean, like, here in Berlin, whenever we have these, like, meetups, it's normally, like, people come to my bar and they hang out at my bar. Or we go to the Bright Moments Gallery and we all meet there. Or Expanded is having a show, so we go to Expanded or whatever, you know, and, like, we meet people that way. I don't think that it's very. There have been moments where, like, Diane Drubé, she was putting on, like, these. Like Hin meetups, you know, like the people who were living in Berlin doing stuff on Hin. She was kind of organizing like a monthly, but then that just sort of fell apart, I guess, you know, over time. And now we don't really have those meetups anymore, unfortunately, but you know, it's the way it goes. I think that was, you know, more a function of how everything just kind of died down all at once and it just kind of pushed it off on the side more than anything. So what's the difference? So break this down for me in your mind. Talk to me about like the philosophy around crypto art in your, from your perspective, and what crypto means for artists and what the idea of crypto art means to you and to the people around you.
Wow. That's a big question.
you want to break it down? Should we make it smaller?
So we have, many of us have philosophical.
Yeah,
those I don't even know how to say that. Philosophized. I'll start it off with saying I always love giving Biddy Labs, Biddy, a shout out. Biddy helped bring a bunch of artists together to create a zine, part of her Def Punk stuff. But a zine where a bunch of us wrote what we thought of our perspectives of crypto art are. And like for anyone who wants to deep dive, like it's minted on both Polygon and Tezos, I think. So, but it's, I should link it in my bio. I always shout it out. I'll put it in my Beacons link at some point in the near future. So if anyone's wanting to find it, they can find it. But that is really like one of the best, best put together in my honest, not just because I'm in it, but also because I'm in it.
But, it does play a role in this, but
But like, because she really takes the approach of trying to get so many different definitions and perspectives of it, because whoever, one of the beauties of it is whoever you ask is going to bring a different thing to the table. I really think crypto art for me, like, it symbolizes autonomy, which is also what my name symbolizes. I didn't get into that with the Empress part. It's like, it's not necessarily that I want to rule things. It's like expressing my autonomy from outside governance.
Okay.
Like, I'm a self-governing unit. And like, I've even contemplated going so far to being like, you know, I'm my own state. I'm my own sovereign state. But I haven't gotten that far yet. But
wow,
who knows? But so I think like self-governance and self-sovereignty, I think there needs to be some intersection of understanding money and the technology to fulfill the crypto part. Now, the art doesn't necessarily need to have themes. In my mind, it doesn't. Some people argue this, that it should have themes of money in it. But I think crypto is a little bit more than just money. Like it's like disrupting so many systems that I think as long as it's like some sort of interaction or like talking about that, like the artist's perspective of the technology that's happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important part. I also, geez, there's so many aspects to it.
I agree.
Now I'm like stuttering in my brain. Like so many things are coming to my head at once.
It's how it goes. I think it's a very interesting and big topic. And I think the concept around crypto art is somewhat polarizing even within crypto art. You know, like you said, there are some people who believe that it needs to be about money in some way, or some people that believe that it needs to have some sort of shitpost meme ability to it, you know.
There's
some
people, the meme aspect too. Some you know, people say it has to have a meme aspect. I love memes.
Sure.
Like when I first got into the space, like I was Empress Trash, but then trash art already existed, like Rob Ness's and all those guys, like, you know, with the toter and everything. And like one thing I was like, well, the toter is cool, but it's not my thing. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't start this meme. It's part of me now because I'm Empress Trash. Like I'm not dismissing the toter, but I am like, it's not my meme.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everyone's meme, but it's not my meme. Yeah. Like, and I was like, well, what do I bring to the table as a trash artist? And I'm like, well, I think I bring like a different, like an ethos of like, I am someone who's been marginalized a lot. I'm someone who has always empathized with other people who are marginalized because we need each other. And I feel like trash art just kind of represents those outsider artists in general. And that was like my definition of trash art that I brought. And I never dismissed, like, sometimes I'd be like, eh, toter, like periodically, but even Rob gets like, eh, toter. Sure,
of course.
It's like, it's one of those things, like memes, they always have that point. You get sick of them.
Sure.
But
then they come back. They come riding back.
Yeah. I was like, but there's the meme aspect of trash art, but then there's the ethos aspect, and then there's the visual aspect.
Sure.
There's different like compartmentalizations and different like binoculars or telescopes that you can look through it through and like glean a new definition. But all of it coming together is it. Mm-hmm. And so this like gets into the decentralization, especially with trash art, where it's easier for me to contextualize this than crypto art, which is like this bigger beast to conceptualize for me. Like, because trash art is so decentralized and we're like, no rules, everyone can define it how they want. It's like you start having all of these definitions and you start learning this mutual respect of having them exist together, because that's what decentralization is in action, in culture, not just like decentralizing money, but I'm like decentralizing culture, decentralizing communication, all of that is like, you know, I think trash art is one thing. Rob thinks it's another, you know, Max O thinks it's another, you know, professor, like all these people think it's a certain thing, but there is like, either we fight about it, which we do a lot, trash artists fight a lot, or like it's a thing. We love fighting.
It's like a big octagon, and you guys just like hang out. Every now and then somebody's making it over the fence, like, I want out of this motherfucker.
It's like, that's it, I'm done. Think of your shit. But in my mind, like that conflict isn't bad. It's just annoying.
Yeah, you need it actually, because you know what?
But you need it. You need pushes it. Things forward, it really does. And also like it leads to a point where there's the mutual respect,
sure,
and everyone can be like, oh, there is infinite space in the digital space. We don't have to play these scarcity games. We don't have to attack each other for resources just because Empress exists and is successful doesn't mean like my success, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
like,
yeah.
Or like, let's say like Rob, like I mean, I talk to him constantly, so he comes up constantly, but like his success isn't taking away from my success.
No, it in fact, it adds success. To it. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, because trash is in my name. I didn't mean that when I came in, it was what I was calling myself before, but it's in my name.
Yeah.
So it's like, and coming to, like, it's a journey to come to those realizations in a way that we're all, like, not necessarily we're all going to make it, but we're all in it together in some way.
In some way. And, in some way. Yeah. We have to be propping each other up. You know, all artists need to be kind of working with each other to sort of, like, put it together. Now, there are, you know, there are limits to that. But there are, you know, like there
that's
are so
where the fighting comes in.
This is where the fighting comes in. You know, hey, when I was in Miami, I don't know if I've told this or not, but when I was there in Miami, this guy, he came over and he talked to me for a little while. And just before he left, he put his hand on my shoulder and he looked me dead in the eye. And he said, "The only true friendship is opposition." And he walked away, and he dropped this gym and he just like moved on. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, oh, I was like, okay. I mean, yeah, cool. He's right. You know, like totally there, you know, you need opposition amongst yourselves in order to get anywhere because nobody exists in a vacuum. And if everybody's in agreement and we're all like going, yeah, then nothing gets done. Right. But like, if you really think about it that way, that's one way you can look at it. Another way is that opposition sucks. And, you know, we're not really trying to do that. We're trying to collaborate, you know, and not just compromise. Yeah. And those are, you know, bigger picture things there. But anyway, back to the crypto art thing. So, because lately what I've noticed is that there are camps that are beginning to sort of form even within the art communities. There were already these little camps that kind of pop up in various stages. Does the chain that you're minting on, does it affect the type of art that gets minted on that chain and then the type of art that becomes crypto art to that particular group of people? Or is crypto art something that is like a constant, like flowing from chain to chain kind of thing, and that all of the imagery in your, to you, I mean, I have my own opinions on this, but like to you, does all of this stuff fit together as like one big moving puzzle? Or is it like Tezos has this kind of art, Ethereum has this kind of art, Polygon has this stuff, Binance has its own, you know, NFT scene. Everything has their own NFT scenes. Some of it is overlapping, but do you feel like it's all sort of just one big thing, or is it like this group has its, this is crypto art for this group and this is crypto art for this group?
I tend to take the view of everything's overlapping and feeding each other. And I like definitely there are subsets and subsets and the subsets, and you know, like there's different like pockets of community, but I think it is really, I'm a cross-chain maxi, first of all, to put it out there. Like I really believe like artists should like explore and experiment on like every blockchain that they're like mentally capable to get their head around, and like play with the tech, because I just think that benefits the artist at the end of the day, because you're tapping into like different people and markets and different energies, because I view it all as energy in general.
But do you feel like the communities from those different blockchains have different energies, or do you feel like it's an overlap?
Yeah, I mean, but it is an overlap too. There is a lot of crossover, because there is also a lot of people like me who are cross-chain. Maxis, like I think we tend to focus on like the single max, like people who, and saying maxi is like someone who's like, I'm only, like for people who don't know, or I'm only minting on this, I'm only using Tezos, I'm only using Ethereum. But like I think there's actually more people who are about cross-chain things than there are people who are about like only this. I just think the people who are like, only this, are louder.
Yeah.
And because it's just like, when you are kind of like, oh no, you do whatever you want, you're just kind of that weed smoking hippie, and you're not as loud. You're just like, oh,
yeah, whatever. It's cool. Yeah,
it's cool.
But do you feel that's like the that, point. But does that sort of endanger sort of, so one of the things that like I've been thinking a lot about here is, like we've seen a lot of marketplaces on various chains come and go. Yeah. Like things pop up. There was a period of time when everybody wanted to mint to Algorand. I don't know if you even remember that, but there was a period of time when they put up a marketplace and people minted there, and people talked about how great Algorand was. And then all of a sudden no one did that anymore. And then, you know, the the artists that thought that they were going to, you know, have some sort of financial freedom by, you know, this over there, and they lost all of, you know, they don't have any of that. That's just gone, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of a, maybe a bad move. Then there's also the, you know, the stories of like people going to Cardano and trying to use Cardano or whatever. So they're using, there's lots of various chains that pop up and become flavors of the month. But generally those communities are not really built around the art itself, but built around something different that has, yeah, that has maybe brought, you know, liquidity to that. And the only reason that the artists know about that is because the influencer culture has pushed those people to that way in order to get sort of the liquidity, those liquidity grabs. And so this is what I worry about, is that whenever artists are chasing, you know, running around chasing liquidity all the time, that they're losing sort of core followers, A. B, they're also maybe giving away a little bit more of the freedom that they think that they're gaining, because they believe that they're gaining financial freedom by using this particular thing. And then that thing just goes to zero, kind of like most things have done. And it causes a bit of an issue there, as long as because the community dissipates. Like, mm-hmm. It's one of the things about this sort of thing, the people that are here right now, I feel anyway, that the people that are here right now are here. You know, we found the Hotel California and we just can't find that fucking exit. We've been trying, you know, but it just doesn't exist. And so we're just still, you know, we're running for it, but we just can't get there. Anyway, I feel like that this is kind of one of the things. I'm also a decentralization maxi. I also feel like, did that do it? Sorry. I'm also a decentralization maxi when it comes. Sorry, there was a light need. Sorry. And in any case, like, back to it, that, you know, it just, I just worry for the way that communities work and how that kind of stuff goes down, that the people aren't going to be continued, that their art is not going to continue to be thought of in the way that it should be, you know, have this sort of mental connection to the collector on those chains that die, and, you know, or that those communities that die because those marketplaces were built to extract value versus, you know, add value.
I mean, some artists are artists that come to this space because one of their draws is A, royalties, and B, also like the sell of everything on the blockchain is forever. And I understood the technology enough early on to know that that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because it's technology.
Yeah.
And like, it's still early technology, and there's a risk that comes in using any of it. And I just don't care. Not saying I don't care about artists like losing their livelihood. That I care about.
Yeah.
Very specifically, I don't care if my art necessarily disappears. I will do my best to rectify a situation.
Yeah.
If like for some reason, like whatever reason, like work disappears.
Mm-hmm.
I will, you know, do something to try to make it up to whoever owns that piece or whatever. But in my mind, it's also kind of like a practice of the temporal nature of the world.
Mm-hmm.
On like a conceptual level, I look at it and I think of like Tibetan sand painting.
Yeah.
Where it's like they specifically make it and it blows away.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not again saying I want that to necessarily happen,
sure,
but it's not something I even really think about a lot of, like, oh, my art is going to disappear or whatever. I just figure everything's going to disappear at some point. Mm. Everything's going
to
die.
But how are you going to get to be on money? How are you going to be on money if you're not like
revolution, my friend?
Or inscription, ordinals. Maybe it's all about ordinals. Maybe we just missed the whole point, and maybe that's what the whole point is that, because that's just drawing on money, right? It's like stamping a gold bar or something like this.
A ghost is throwing stuff around.
Oh no, I think it's your dog.
No, my dog is right next to me.
Oh geez, and it's definitely a ghost.
It's something weird. Anyway.
I mean, because like,
no, ordinals. I mean, yeah. I mean, I agree with like I mean, I think minting something and it's linked to art is just as valid in a lot of ways. Mm. Just because the internet is comprised of links.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the internet is.
Yeah.
That's
a lot of them are dead.
Yeah, a lot of them are dead. And so it's on us as self-sovereign artists
To keep
make
control.
Make sure that our links
don't aren't die. Dead. But what about when you die? And you can't be the one to keep control of that anymore. So, like, this is the whole point of some of this
stuff.
My ghost
will just be in the machine.
The ghost is on it. The ghost is on it. Man, thank goodness for ghosts.
That's my plan. I don't everything else. That's you mere mortals' problems.
We'll handle it, man. We're going to solve this. We're going to keep this art alive. No, I mean, this is for me, this is just one of those big picture, you know, things that I'm thinking about. Kind of, you know, it's a little bit more in the zeitgeist right now because, you know, the way the Twitter sphere has been kind of going insane on it. But it's also kind of been there from the beginning because of how people have had a difficult time keeping digital art, you know, archived anyway. What is your connection to improvs, like, and using AI? Like, how did you get to doing that? How did that come about? Because I'm interested to tie that back into this in a minute, but how did that happen?
I love AI a lot. I always knew of it. I never used it a ton until I got into this space. Mm-hmm. Purely because I met people who were willing to teach me about it and not be jerks. Mm-hmm. And like, because I think sometimes when you're dealing with technology, like, you can have people who are really smart and also be jerks. And one thing I love also about the crypto art space is, there's some jerks, but overall, like, if you want to learn something from someone, people want to teach you.
Open source.
And, and it's not, there's very little barriers in that. As long as you approach in a way that isn't trying to, like, get money from them. Because that's, like, everyone's being asked, like, trying to be shaken down for money all the time. Yeah. So it's, like, if you actually are authentic and wanting to learn something, I find 90% of people in crypto are willing to teach you. So I started learning AI a couple years ago.
Okay.
I originally started on, like, the Wombo app on my phone, and then I was on early, like, the first versions of Midjourney, and then I have dove deeper, and now I have, like, a locally installed stable Diffusion. Oh. I've been, like, learning that slowly but surely, because the technology is advancing so quick.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't learn it. I mean, I have my friend Purs Beats, I always shout him out. Yeah. He teaches AI stuff amazingly. Yeah. I don't know how he stays on top of it all. Like, to know, like, every new thing that's coming out, I just, like...
And play the drums.
Like, he's a genius. And I'm like, DMing him. I'm like, I don't know how to do this baby thing. Like, please tell me. And he's like, let's get on Discord and I'll show you. Like, it's the best. But
that's awesome.
So from all that, like, I've been using AI for a couple of years in my work now. And that's, like, the work that really has gotten known and, like, you know, was in Sotheby's and all that shit, all that fancy shit. Mm-hmm. That was all AI mixed with Glitch and mixed with Trash. So, like, because I'm using AI and Photomosh, and Photomosh and crypto art used to be considered this really low effort software.
Yeah.
And that's actually when, like, the original Trash artist got kicked off Super Rare. It was like they took a picture off, you know, a found picture, and threw it through Photomosh and put it up. And that's the whole thing. It's like digital trash. It's a found artifact. It's found art. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'm tangenting because you asked about improvs.
Yeah,
but Photomosh is, like, a huge thing, like, about all of that, like, integrating it all together. Because I'm just like, well, this is, like, you know, AI. Everyone's like, this isn't really art. People are like, Photomosh, this isn't really art. And me putting it all together, I'm like,
is it really art?
I have a BFA. I can say whatever I want.
I have a degree in this shit. This is art. Yeah.
This is art. And so, like, really pushing against those concepts of it. Mm-hmm. And why I was attracted to M-props, and I've done two drops with them now on Tezos, uh-huh. however in the world you say that. Yeah. I say Tezos personally.
I do too. I say Tezos.
I found them because a friend pointed them out to me, and I was looking at it. I'm like, this is conceptually like the dopest stuff ever, because what M-props is it's generative AI. Mm-hmm. So when you mint, you can do it when you mint. It's called long form on there.
Yeah.
Long form generative. When you mint, it generates the image right then.
Yeah.
And that to me, like, I like when I saw that, like my little brain was like, this is going to make so many people angry. I'm not curating.
Yeah.
I'm not editing.
Yeah.
I'm just like putting my prompts in and that's it. Yeah. And then like the concept on it is what makes it art. And like the, like everything around it makes it art. But like it's really pushing in on all these narratives of like you have to like edit the AI for it to be real art. You have to do this with it to be real art. It's like, no, like it's generated. It's art. Like,
yeah,
that's it.
Well, it's even more pure than that because it runs from your concept direct. And like that to me feels like it's much, it's super duper like mainline, you know?
It's like mainlining right into my psyche.
Yeah.
Like it is. It's like... Yeah. Like, you want to know what's going on here, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, my first drop with them, I'll just, like, talk about it quick.
Yeah, sure.
I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
I mixed Wayne, I can never say his last name right, Thibaud.
Oh, Wayne Thibaud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mouth, it's, like, always fucks it up. And, like, I have a speech impediment, just so people know.
Didn't even notice.
There's certain words I have a hard time with, but so my painting teacher learned from Wayne.
Uh-huh.
And so I learned from someone who learned from him.
Got it.
And so I always used to joke around, like, he's my grandpa, like my painting grandpa, because I don't really have like a solid connection with my actual family. So I always construct these imaginary families around me, and him being one of them, like my painting, like progenitor. But I even studied his work a ton. And I, like, when I lived in the Bay Area, I would go look at it all the time. I never actually got to meet him. He died before I got to that point. I think he died. Yeah, he died. And I don't think I'm confusing him with someone else. And I like learned a lot about color from him. Like color, if you look at my work, you can see the color, the same color theory. And like just even in my digital work, because I learned from someone who learned from him all of that. And I also learned like painting techniques, but mostly the colors were translated to digital. Mm-hmm. So I was mixing that with like my own art and like themes that I put on it in Stable Diffusion, and I put it out there because it's really pushing on that, like, well, I spent all these years studying painting and studying his art, but what does that mean in the age of AI when I can just pull his style up and put it on my art?
Exactly.
Like, and it's like, and it's not trying to demean one or the other. It's just literally making a series to try to put that in question, like, what does this even mean?
Yep.
And like having the work actually be created and actually look at it and reflect on it, like, for me, because I didn't know what was going to be generated. And so like while it was being minted, for me, even I'm like watching it and like, what is this story going to unfold? I don't even know.
And I got a great bag. My bag is awesome. That bag that I minted was,
that's a beautiful bag.
Such a bag. Wow.
Well, because I mixed the prompts with different variables of fashion things. Because I also was thinking about when I was an art appraiser, I also was like, when we'd run out of art, like I would like appraise like high-end jewelry and, you know, like fashion stuff sometimes. And so like that was like this, like when we were just out of work. And so I was just thinking about all that stuff. And so the bags are specifically just kind of a nod to when I was an art appraiser.
That's cool.
like, because it would be like, I would have to like authenticate Louis Vuitton bags and stuff and make sure, like, verify that they're actually Louis Vuitton.
How do you do that? What do you do? How do you even figure that stuff out?
So there's a lot of, like, you have to understand like how they're constructed.
The
so
stitching.
We actually took a lot of workshops on that. And then they have a code system that's embossed on them.
Oh.
And like there's certain fonts that are like very specific to Louis Vuitton.
Mm-hmm.
And to like a fake, first of all, you look at the stitching. Second of all, you look at the codes. Because usually the fakes, even though like the codes are just out there, the fakes, for some reason, never use right code.
Oh, no. It's like, why? What the hell? Come on, scammers. Get a little bit better. Come on.
Yeah, like, they're all out there. Like, you can look at, go grab a bag and be like, oh, damn. This is, like.
Why? That just seems like the most basic. Oh, man, we're just going to, like, fuck up the code part. That'll get them.
They won't notice.
They won't notice. Yeah, that's pretty weird. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know anyway. That. I had no idea that they made those codes like that. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm in Versace stuff actually has a QR code that comes with it. And with newer stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you can digitally authenticate it. And so I was like seeing that. And then I was seeing blockchain stuff. And I'm like, well, this is a no.
Yeah.
Brainer.
Where, like, how do they digitally, are they doing it on a chain or are they doing it on their own permission chain?
Just this is, like, I think they started doing it before blockchain. I just think it was on their website. Mm. You just go and it's like, yep, this is a Versace piece. Mm. Nope. Yeah. This is a fake QR code.
Your wallet just got drained. Ding, ding, ding.
Your wallet just got drained by Versace.
Congratulations. Yeah, no, I've been wondering about that because, you know, like Uniqlo, like when you go, you know, that brand Uniqlo,
yeah.
Like when you go there to buy stuff now, you just put a pile, you just put all your shit in like a basket, like at the front, there's no person there. You just put it in the basket and it automatically reads each individual item that's in your thing there, because I guess they all have RFIDs on them, on their little tags, and then the tags come off and then you can just walk out. With
how the tags come off?
No, they don't. Like, actually, they don't. The tags don't come off. They must stay on the thing, and I guess that they're just read as being they're read as being like gone. They're out of the system now.
Okay.
So that's
what do they have like a special laser that they?
I meant like the information on the tag is like, you know, they have it's uploaded and it's gone. That for you, each individual item now versus like. All of the red dresses, all the various sizes in the red dresses. Like before, you would just ring it and it'd be like this red dress from this brand. Now it's like this individual item is like the item that's walking out the door, not just like a red dress from this particular place. So that's pretty fascinating. And that's using blockchain technology, I'm pretty sure, because there's no other way that you could do that in that way that I can fathom in my head to get it together. So I'm wondering about other places that do that too. So
I don't know. I mean, authentication of high-end goods or just like how you're talking about with like security,
mm-hmm.
like all of that is like very real applications of blockchain.
Yeah.
And like that's, I mean, I saw it because I was, you know, again, I was working as an art appraiser and then I was learning about this stuff. And it just like, to me, it was so crystal clear. I'm like, well, my job as an authenticator is going to be obsoleted. So I might as well jump ship and learn all this stuff
and start using Table Diffusion better. And use that to authenticate
and become a famous artist in the meantime.
Just for fun. Get your face on money.
Yes.
I love that was like a driving force for you, that the fact that Frida Kahlo was on money.
It Frida Kahlo money. It wasn't necessarily to get my face on money, but it was the fact that
she's on it. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that's such a driving force. That to me says that you're really in it for that thing that you're really about, because that's, you know, that's awesome. That's fantastic. I didn't know you were in Sotheby's. What you were in a show for Sotheby's? Did you sell art to them?
Yeah. The Beyond Binary snafu.
Sick. I remember that. Right.
Yeah. Where, you know, it like, you know, they only had men in the glitch art show,
right.
And then it like blew up and Patrick, who's a good friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
pulled out as a gentleman does. Mm-hmm. That's my joke.
As a gentleman does. Yes.
As such a gentleman does. Yeah. No, and it just led to my friend Dania Let's Glitch It curating. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't care about being in Sotheby's. I could care less. I used to work in like that.
It is an interesting thing, though. Come on, you know.
No, yeah, but I mean, it's good to have. I mean,
yeah,
love it or hate it, you put that on your CV, and then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of people care about what you have to say.
Yeah.
So,
it's something.
It's something. Yeah. But yeah, I wasn't like my whole thing. I was just more mad that they left Donnie out because she's been a glitch artist forever and. Like, there are other people I didn't quite know, but Dania is, like, my mom when it comes to, like, glitch art. So it's, like, but she's, like, oh, I want you in the show. And I, him and hot about it, but I always err on supporting my friends. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, well, I have experience in this world. So it's going to be good for me to be in this show to just help you navigate being a curator with Sotheby's when it's something she's never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, I was in it and we were like showcased at the New York headquarters.
That's great. Cool.
It was a whole to do.
Did you go? And
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I have a picture on, I gave to the winner because they undervalued my work like a lot. My piece went for like, they appraised it for like $1,000, and my piece went for like $4,000.
Oh wow!
Which is still very low for Sotheby's, yeah, but it's still great. Like we're talking about income, we're talking about valuation discrepancies because of gender.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, of course, it's gonna be like that. But what was I gonna say? Yeah, I undervalued. I took a picture while I was at Sotheby's with my piece. Dania took it of me flicking off the camera. And I'm just like this shit-eating grin like in front of my work at Sotheby's just flicking off. And that's like I feel like my most iconic picture from last year.
Wonderful.
And probably my whole life.
That's great.
But I minted it on Tezos and I gave it to the person who won the auction.
That's great.
Because Colonna, who has a gallery in Pittsburgh or somewhere in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh or
somewhere in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Yeah. Sorry.
Philly or Pittsburgh.
God. He's going to be so mad at me. He's going to be like, you don't even know where your art is.
Hey, we have 3 minutes. We've got to get off the air because there's the next thing coming up. This has been great. I really appreciate all of this. This has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
Who is the most iconic artist for you?
Like ever?
Yeah. Like in anything. Music, movies,
art. Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga. Interesting.
I adore Lady Gaga.
Why?
Because she's subversive in her own way, and she's figured out how to play into pop culture veins while still being subversive. Mm-hmm. And I admired that a lot. And she just is she's, for me and like my time and space and generation, it's just like, I feel like I can relate to her a lot.
Cool.
And just like she grew up in the same cultures, you know, the same music, the same art, the same like weird crazy stuff going on in our generation, and then she synthesized that all into her, and then she's transcended. Like to watch that to me was like, you know, one of the coolest things. Like, I've been following her since before she was like, I mean, a hipster on Lady Gaga, but before she was super popular.
Yeah.
Like I was like, who's this? And I don't know. I just think, to me, she's one of those very iconic people that I admire.
That's greatly. Awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, hey, it's been great. It's been really, really fun having you on. This has been a fantastic time for me. I hope you had a good time.
Yeah, I had a great time.
That's good. And everybody
I'm going to go burn some money.
That's a good move. That's a great move. I'm going to do it too. I got to get my house is cold. I got to go up there. I got like stacks of thousands I got to burn out.
Hey, I just have like I need to cook breakfast.
That's a good idea too. Hey, everybody, thank you very much for listening. If you've been listening to this on keithfm.com, there's a nice PayPal button there. That Your donations keep this studio rolling. If you've got a Tez wallet, you can hit me some Tez or some tokens at idontlikepodcasts.tez, or you can send me some ETH directly to kenconsumer.eth. Thanks a lot.